Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Mount Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus, and tonight on Living Mythology, I'm proud to bring you Sword and Sandal Cinema. But first, Legends of Hercules. The Heraclidae of myth were mercilessly hunted by King Eurystheus, who feared the legitimate claim to his throne. Once, he even tried to slay them all during a memorial feast held in honor of the departed father. Those who escaped raised an army and disposed of the tyrant king. Later, they were driven out of Greece as their collective might was perceived as a great threat. An oracle was consulted and a prophecy granted. The exiled daughters and sons of Hercules wandered the wider world, and eventually some of them settled down. Their mighty progeny returned to Hellas a few generations later as the Dorian invasion. In my childhood imagination, all of the events of the Sons of Hercules television series happened during their turbulent lives. Although I later discovered that clever marketing was a much greater factor in shaping the show and honoring a very obscure mythic continuity, to this day I prefer to believe my own innocent explanation rather than the sordid facts. In The Sons of Hercules, a board game by Milton Bradley, you are one of the four Sons of Hercules competing for fame and glory in an arena packed with cheering spectators. There are six epic tasks to complete, and once you have triumphed in one of these contests, you win a coveted arm ring. Then, aside from the feats of strength, you can challenge your brothers and half-brothers for possession of their own hard-won award rings. 2 to 4 heroes can compete, and the winner is the first to gather 4 award rings. Each game takes about 15 minutes to complete. The Sons of Hercules was easy to learn and quick to play. It brought back many treasured memories, and it's well worth playing for nostalgic reasons alone. I've already figured out a way of integrating it into my next interactive storytelling campaign. Thank you to Jeffrey C. Hogue of Charles Atlas for gifting me with this treasure from such simpler times. And thank you to the development team of the 1960s TV show, including the epic songwriter whose true identity still remains an enigma, or did at the time of this writing. This was actually part of my Sword and Sandal for the Souls series of yesteryear. Whatever their motives, they developed, they deeply influenced my personal destiny. And now for a quick song, Mighty Elohim, for reasons that will become clear in April.
This is the spirit, so sing your song.
That was Mighty Elohim by Linnell Griffin. And as I stated before I played it, that is a hint to an event or a series of events that will be initiated in April. And now, without further ado, we continue with Sword and Sandal Cinema and Ron Carson, who is going to take us to Atlas in the Land of the Cyclops. Greetings, Ron. How are you?
Greetings, Xanthope. I am fine. How are you doing on this last day of February?
I'm doing fantastic. Looking forward to March and April.
Okay, so am I, because winter will be gone before you know it. We had over 4 inches of snow here last night into this morning up in Massachusetts, so I definitely am pining for warmer weather right now.
Well, we've been having warmer weather. Some days seem like spring-like or summer-like, and we've been enjoying a pretty mild winter. Today it snowed, and we did some shoveling, but otherwise, after the snow had passed, the day was quite warm.
Yeah, I was going to ask you if you got any snow down in Tenafly. It looks like you received some of the white stuff. How many inches?
It wasn't inches. By the time we got around to shoveling it, a lot of it had melted. So it was heavier where it was laden with water because it was sleet. And also the ice started melting a little bit and then permeating the snow. So it was sludgy. So it was heavy and difficult to move. But it wasn't that cold out. By the time we finished the shoveling, the sun had started to melt whatever we didn't get to.
Well, like I said, countdown to spring.
It will be here before we know it, as you said. Now, what made you pick Atlas in the Land of the Cyclops? I haven't seen that movie in a while. I remember there was a Cyclops, there was Atlas, and there was a witch. And that's pretty much what I remember about the movie.
Well, this is why I picked it, because, you know, the Cyclops is definitely a prime peplum character. And pretty much we've spotlighted some motion pictures regarding this one-eyed monster.
Mm-hmm.
And I figured was I was looking for a film to review because, yes, I am on my own again because our co-owner of the Coliseum, Andrea, is once again missing in action. So we are doing this all by ourselves, just like the old days. And folks out there at the Coliseum got their coats on and we had a little bit of the light snow going on, but they're enjoying the movie in more ways than one.
Very true. And you've known that you were going to be a DJ since childhood, and you started doing your own shows. And then we started doing shows together when we were in grammar school with Tape Recorder.
Tape Recorder, the vinyl. You guessed it. You got it. You know, it was pretty much the culmination of a dream come true. But unfortunately, what I'm doing right now is I'm in a displaced nature here at my current radio station. I'm only doing one air shift a week, which is a Saturday morning request show, and it's really well received. Starts at 10 and goes right up until 12 noon, and I fill in for my boss in the morning if necessary. But, you know, 62 years old in July, things are definitely going to be changing. New adventures are going to be prolonging in my life slowly but surely, and we'll fill you in on the situation at hand.
When new adventures are good.
Yes, when the time warrants, we'll definitely fill you in. But for now, let's go to the movies, okay? How about that?
Okay, sounds good.
It's Italian Gothic horror film. As you know, Atlas in the Land of Cyclops. It was released overseas in 1961, but it didn't get into the United States until April of 1963, and there was some adage footage that we enjoyed that folks from across the pond did not.
What was the added footage?
Outtakes, you know, deleted scenes. They made it into a 94-minute film, so they added another 6 minutes into the mix for the American version of this particular film. And This movie was directed by Antonio Leon Viola. I hope I pronounced that right. And it pretty much had a very good following overseas. I wouldn't be surprised if my Uncle Achilles, who used to run movies in Athens, if you remember.
I remember.
He would very much emphasize the sword and sandal films because they do very well in Europe, not only in the United States, but across the pond as well. So that's the good thing. So I wouldn't be surprised if he actually showed this movie way back when.
I remember cinema in Greece, not in Athens. In Athens, it was pretty much like it was here in the States. But I remember in Moulouros when they used to come around every now and then, and they used to project it on the sides of houses in the Agora.
Yes. Yes. Not only that, sometimes, you know, when the soldiers in the Greek army would want to see a movie, we were invited to the Leschi, as they said. Remember?
Right.
And we'd go see a movie there, and they wouldn't charge us a drachma or a euro or whatever you want.
And that
a free movie. That was always a good thing, if you ask me. We did.
No,
we took advantage of that quite wholeheartedly.
And then there was, I forgot if it was the same as the Leschi, but there was a storage building where if the weather was very bad or if it was winter, they would show the movies in there. It was kind of like a storage place or a barn or something. I remember being shown
Well, let me tell you about the theaters in Athens. I mean, they were pretty much like convertibles. They had no roofs, if you remember.
Yeah, some of them had no roofs. Some of them, in Omonia and places like that, they did have roofs. But many of them,
major cinemas. But
right.
My Uncle Achilles, I remember, had no roof when he was showing a movie. And, you know, it hardly rains in Athens, especially in the summertime. It can get very, very desert-like hot out there. And be a nice way to cool off in the evening, go see a movie. And that was the cool thing about that. But focus on this particular picture that we selected tonight. It's a movie that was directed by Gordon Mitchell and Chelo Alonso. Okay? So, and Gordon Mitchell actually starred in the movie, too. No, I'm sorry. Gordon did not direct it. I already gave you the director. But Gordon Mitchell was the star of the film. He played Atlas, of course.
Okay.
And Chelo Alonso was Queen Capis. And Vera Celente was Queen Penope. If you're remembering some of these characters, I'm pretty sure you have a copy of this somewhere in your collection back home.
I definitely have a couple of copies of Atlas and Land of Cyclops, but it's been a while since I've seen them. I remember enjoying the movie. I remember when I purchased it in Manhattan and being very excited that I found it. And then I remember picking it up through Amazon, another edition of it. But all I really remember is Atlas, the Cyclops, a cave, and a witch. And that's kind of like all that remains in my memory at this point in time. So I was looking
I'm going to refresh your memory, and if you have an extra copy of that, I'd love to have it in my collection, too.
I will seek it out.
Excellent. All right. Now, of course, Queen Capis has been doomed to a life of slavery by the so-called powers of darkness, and the last descendant of Ulysses, which is Macist, Gordon Mitchell, was put to death, and that would please the Cyclops, who pretty much would be a cannibal in more ways than one. And the Queen's soldiers pretty much have an attack with the Cyclops, and then the descendant of Ulysses is killed, and his wife is enslaved. But the infant son, he was saved to be protected by Macist, who was Gordon Mitchell in this movie. So, it pretty much gave you an idea of what this was all about. It was a one-on-one battle between Macist and the Cyclops down the road in this movie, if you remember.
You know where the word machista comes from?
Remind me.
In Limno, if you remember, there were strong men that used to come and pass through the villages, like there were magicians too, and you know, other people used to pass by the village and they do the demonstration. The muscle men who did like feats of strength, like I remember one guy would throw a sledgehammer up in the air and then like headbutt it as it came down. And other guys pulling cars with chains in their teeth and breaking chains and
yeah,
things like
that. Yeah, I do remember that. Oh, boy, are you taking me back to the old?
They were called magistes.
Magistes,
yes. So the term or the name machiste, which is used very often in the sword and sandal cinema, is that name, magistis, machiste, as the Italians would call them. And that tradition of there being machistes in not only in sword and sandal times, but throughout history, there have been machiste movies where he's in the Old West and he's in a lot of other places with prehistoric dinosaurs. So you had in Greece and Italy and in Europe, and I'm sure in this country too, at some point, you had these wandering strongmen. So that was the machisti or the machiste. So that's where they got that name from.
That's interesting to find out a little tidbit about this particular character in the movie. Now, did you know that the movie was actually, you know, spoken in Italian, the original version that came out in 61? And in the re-release for English, it was dubbed.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if you remember, we used to watch all those martial arts films, you and I, and, you know, they were dubbed the characters because they spoke in different languages.
Right.
So this was the same path that Atlas and the Land of Cyclops took also. It was a dubbed English version of the movie, and it did very well, too, and it kind of falls into the category of Italian Gothic horror films, which were a staple throughout the late 50s and early and throughout the 60s, actually. So it does have a cult following to this day.
Yeah, no doubt. All of these films still have a cult following. And if you total up the people in my Sword and Sandal cinema groups on Facebook alone, there's about 30,000 souls who are into one aspect, excuse me, or another of Sword and Sandal cinema.
Yeah, I'm definitely in agreement with you on that, sure. So to make a long story short, the movie, besides Gordon Mitchell, had a Italian cast. Let's give you some of the supporting roles. The Cyclops was played by a gentleman by the name of Aldo Pedinotti. And then we had Massimo Righi as Ephros. Paul Winter Mumba was his name. Raffaella Cara as Eber. Aronio was played by Giotto Tempestini. God, I'm hoping I'm getting all these names right over here. Cerrone was by Aldo Bufilandi, and Dante DiPaolo played the role of Ifito. So there's the rest of your cast in this particular picture. Now, do any of these characters ring a bell for you?
No, but when you mentioned the descendant of Ulysses, or Odysseus, as we call him in our land, I started remembering those parts, and I confused the queen with the witch, but she was kind of witch-like. So I can.
You're talking about Queen Capis or Queen Penelope?
Yeah. One of the queens. I don't remember very clearly which one, but one of them was very witchy.
There were two of them. Unfortunately, I didn't get a chance to watch the movie again because it was such short notice that I picked this for our topic tonight, but it looks like the audience here at the Coliseum, even though they're kind of cold, you know, we provided them with free coffee and hot chocolate, too, in the long run, too. So we always like to be generous and keep our customers happy. But this time around, free popcorn is not in the mix because it's a cold day, so we decided on a hot beverage, actually, you know?
Very good. So everyone, grab your real or imaginary hot beverage and enjoy the rest of the show. Now, we only have a few minutes left, and I'm planning a 25th anniversary for Brian Walker. His Coliseum, his drive-in theater has been around for 25 years now, and he's totally revamped it. He'll never be content with it, so it's going to be a work in progress forever, but he's done substantial work on it. So I'm planning a special Sword and Sandal cinema show to celebrate his 25th years. I'm inviting all the hosts and also the champions of Sword and Sandal cinema that we have inside the groups, the people who are very active and contribute a lot to the groups. So we're planning this, and we should be airing sometime within the next 6 weeks. And
all right, count me in, Sandra. Count me in for sure.
Fantastic. It'll be on Zoom most likely. Are you able to get Zoom?
I will try. I mean, I have to brush up on my modern technological skills over here because, for starters, I'm still computer inept, if you get my drift.
Well, all of us are to one degree or another. I seem to do a lot, but actually it takes me a while to learn how to do what I do. It's taking years to feel comfortable with the technology I'm currently using, and we're always in the process of evolving it. In addition to the Zoom shows, which are then put on YouTube, we've also started doing shows that are being edited with music added. So that's another experiment that's happening now. And if that turns out okay, that'll be another option open to our hosts. There will, of course, be a Sword and Sandal cinema in that new format, just as there is on Zoom and also here on Block Talk Radio.
I also want to give kudos to Brian for the fact that when he posts on Facebook, he actually finds one of these B-movies that we haven't seen or heard from in a long, long time. Some of the titles are pretty much recognizable, but others are not. But you basically have a chance to just tap onto the link over there and watch that whole film from start to finish. So I did want to offer my stamp of approval to Brian because I really admire what he's doing on his page, and he's kind of keeping it very, very active. And he's reminding us of more of these Sword and Sandal films that we haven't heard from or seen in quite a while. I mean, if you remember, we were pretty much disciples of the peplum cinema when we were watching Million Dollar Movie on Channel 9.
Yeah, I remember. Yes, the Sword and Sandal cinema plus all the mythology we learned in parochial school and growing up, those had a profound influence on my life. In fact, I wouldn't be who I am without that influence. So I'm very grateful for not only the field or the genre, but to all of those who, each in their own way, have tried to keep it alive and available.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So hats off to Brian on that one. And I bet you any money, our good old Facebook friend Steve Smith has a copy of this movie somewhere in his collection.
Have you heard from Steve? I haven't heard from Steve in quite a while.
No, I've seen posts of Steve because he's still receiving all these nifty things regarding our genre in books, movies, and he proudly displays them in a selfie. So that's about the only way I've been listening or, you know, following Steve is through his posts on Facebook. So
Stephen Smith was one of my first interviews I did back when Sword and Sandal Cinema was an MSN group. And
yes.
So he's been around for a very long time. Last I heard, he was working on a book with Wales, his friend.
Nick Whale, yes.
Nick Whale, yeah. Anyway, the time is up for today's conversation. How can people contact you, Xalifa?
All right, I'm still on Facebook. All you gotta do is type in Ron Carson on the toolbar. I'll automatically friend you ASAP. And I welcome folks from your audience to call in on Saturday morning, 10 a.m. I have an all-request show, and we feature nothing but the best music from the 70s and 80s during this program.
Well, you're welcome to post it on my personal page, and I'll spread it around.
Yep, and they can listen via the website, WSBS.com, or on the free WSBS app, and we're available on smart speaker devices, i.e. like Alexa. And you'll get to go on a stroll down memory lane. We call it an escape to the 70s and 80s. And it's kind of like a nice breath of fresh air as opposed to the regular music that airs here. So, and it's very well received because the response for the requests from local people here in our listening area and Facebook and all across the nation are very much submitting their selections to me. And it's pretty much the audience's show, not mine. So I really would appreciate if the Sword and Sandal crowd can come on over and do a little reminiscing with us and drop me a message in my inbox or call me. And the number is 1-413-528-0860. And I'll be glad to play a song for you. That's what's awesome about it.
You're in the groups. Invite them directly.
I shall do that. Well, I'll also post on your page, on the Sword and Sandal page, I'll post a reminder that the request show will be on every Saturday morning, and hopefully we'll get some people from our group to pretty much chime in and enjoy some fantastic music.
I'm sure, because many people like music and other radio-type topics are your forte. Thank you, Xadophis Tagapo. I will talk to you very soon, and I will let you know when our celebration of Brian's Drive-In Theater is happening, and we'll make it happen this month.
The month of March is right around the corner. And we will be looking forward to spring more than anything. How about that?
Very good. Be well, safe journeys, and I will talk to you very soon.
All right. Satapuma, as they say, Sagapok Sadalfa. And we'll chat, like I said, in the coming days, and give my love to my lovely aunt and godmother, Elizabeth, next door. She's doing well, I hope.
She's doing well. Everyone's doing well.
Okay, well, great. Well, give her my love and utmost regards when you talk to her again. And my best to Athena and the four-legged friends and your son, Brandon. I mean, can't wait to see you guys again real soon.
That will happen now that the pandemic is no longer as much of a concern. So,
yachara. Yes, absolutely. And like I said, I'm looking forward to cluing you in on my future adventures, which are going to be coming to full tilt come summertime.
Fantastic. I'm available by phone. You can press a few buttons.
All right, yachara. We'll talk soon. Kalinikta.
Kalinikta. Yachara. Bye-bye. And now we proceed with Sword and Sandal Cinema Part 2 for today. The one, the only, Brian Walker. Greetings, Brian. How are you?
I'm well this evening. How are you, Hercules?
I am well. You probably came in during some of the discussion, but I am planning the celebration, 25 years of Brian's drive-in cinema. And I'm really excited. And I'm going to be inviting all the hosts, plus all the champions of Sword and Sandal Cinema. And we're planning it right now.
Oh, that sounds great. I'm looking forward to it.
So today, that was Ron Carson with Atlas and Land of the Cyclops. Today, Lang Jeffries and the Revolt of the Slaves.
Yeah, I've been going back through the website. I mean, yes, I finished the facelift, but I'm having to do another facelift on it. Just behind the scenes, it's not really changing the look of each page at all. But the real reason I picked Lang Jeffries was because I revisited his page, and I, the second time in about a year. And I was working on the HTML and reading it at the same time, looking for mistakes and things like that. And I thought, for a number of years, I've been meaning to put Lang Jeffries on the Many Faces of Hercules page because he did four Peplum films.
Mm-hmm.
In his very first film, as a matter of fact, was a peplum, which is Revolt of the Slaves. And I thought, I need to rework his page a little bit in order to make it fit in a little more with the Many Faces of Hercules. But I'll be working on that here in the next few weeks or so. But in the meanwhile, we can always talk about him, even if he isn't officially on the page yet, but we'll be soon.
So this will be a prelude to his being on the page, which is awesome.
Right. Actually, he was from Toronto, so technically Canadian. However, he grew up stateside in Michigan, which is not really south, now that I think about it, but west of Toronto. How about that? Anyway, he was just sort of a journeyman. He'd served in the Korean War. And he had some kind of menial jobs here and there, and he decided to chuck it all when he was probably in his mid-20s and just throw caution to the wind, quit his job, moved to California, and decided that he wanted to be an actor. And in about 3 years' time, he was cast in his own television series. So he must have had something going for him, even though he didn't really have any formal training, at least until he moved to the Los Angeles area. The show he was on was a syndicated television series, which in the 50s and 60s, you used to see a lot of that, and that went away probably in the 90s or so. But syndicated television series were, first-run TV series that were sold to individual TV stations mm-hmm. and syndication packages. Usually a production company would offer television stations sort of an array. They would have several different shows that the stations could choose from. And those would usually air whenever the station didn't have its broadcast feed coming in from the network that it subscribed to, whether that was, ABC, NBC, CBS, Dumont, once upon a time, at least until 1956 or so. And it didn't matter what your network affiliation was. If your station bought into the syndication package, you could run these, first-run TV shows, and this was one of them. And it was sort of a dramatic series, and it involved a group of EMTs, firefighters and such. And it was sort of it was a little bit like Emergency in the early 70s. Do you remember the old Jack Webb show? Okay. This was in the same vein, kind of something similar, only lower budget. Didn't have network dollars behind it, unfortunately. But while he was shooting this series, he met the actress Rhonda Fleming. And Rhonda Fleming had been a big star, once upon a time. She was known as the Queen of Technicolor because she had this sort of auburn hair that photographed particularly well, with that old Technicolor film stock that made everything look so vivid and bright. And she was, of course, a beautiful woman, but a very talented one as well. She was in Alfred Hitchcock's Spellbound, and she's really good in it as well. Spellbound also stars Gregory Peck and Ingrid Bergman. So if you think about it, she's 22 years old and holding her own with Gregory Peck and Ingrid Bergman, and she's got a pretty good sizable role in it. She's also in one of my favorite mid-40s movies, The Spiral Staircase, just a really great thriller with George Brent in probably one of his last important films before his career kind of began to ebb, and Dorothy McGuire. Now, at the time, Lane Jeffries and Rhonda Fleming met, his career, it was on an upward projectile. Her career, had unfortunately begun to sag because in the mid to late 1950s, all the studios shed their contract players. They didn't have, guaranteed theaters to put the films in anymore. Television had eaten into a lot of film production. And suddenly the studios didn't need, these very, very expensive casts. And there's a lot to be said about the death of the studio system, and I don't think it was always the best thing for films. You would think it would be, you know, breaking up a monopoly, but actually it wasn't. Because, you know, since the studios, the big ones anyway, I mean, Monogram wasn't doing things out of, you know, the goodness of their hearts. But occasionally one of the big studios would do a project that wasn't likely to make a lot of money. But some of these films were, you know, pretty important films, nonetheless, and you know, kind of let some of the artists, you know, take over as long as they stayed in budget, and that includes production time and costs, because that's everything, you know. And you know, Rhonda Fleming was a very well-known actress, and like I said, you gorgeous, just beautiful. She photographed so well, and she's in one of my favorite noir thrillers called Slightly Scarlet. It's made by RKO, and she stars in it with Arlene Dahl. She and Arlene Dahl are sisters. Rumor has it that they didn't get along very well, and one was always trying to upstage the other. If you ask me, that sounds like a lot of screen tabloid fodder. Yeah, really. Mm-hmm. If there was any kind of issue like that going on the set, it doesn't show up in the film, because it's a really fun, expensive looking noir. There's some production value behind it. But anyway, at the time she met Lane Jeffries, her career sort of hit a rough spot, and she was still young and vibrant and still very talented, but it happened to so many people during that time period. On the other hand, she did find a job in a Peplum film that she headlined, and that is Revolt of the Slaves. She signed the contract in Rome. The film was actually shot in Spain. But as she was dating Lane Jeffries, they had sort of a whirlwind romance. They got married. He went with her to sign her contract. They found out together that the lead male, the slave in Revolt of the Slaves, hadn't been cast, and they made a deal and got Rhonda Fleming's new husband, Lane Jeffries, cast in the films, in the film, that is. And I don't know if you've ever seen Revolt of the Slaves or not. Fortunately, a lot of Lane Jeffries films are available on YouTube. It's a really surprising number of his films. Although he was from North America, the bulk of his career is in films shot in Europe, you know, almost all of them, with a couple of exceptions. And he was more of an international star than he was an American movie star, if that makes any sense.
That makes sense.
And he, much like some of the other Peplum actors, you know, he had a career past Peplums. He did a lot of Eurospy films, and I do mean a lot. That's probably, I'd say a third of the films that he made. He was in about 25 movies or so. And I'd say a third of them are Eurospy. Close to a third anyway. And then, much like people like Richard Harrison, who sort of went through one, European genre after another, because that's what you did to survive as an actor. He had a very similar career. And I see a few parallels between Richard Harrison and Lane Jeffries. For one of them, when we think of Hercules films, I'm as guilty of this as anybody, immediately imagine Steve Reeves. Or it might be Reg Park, because it depends on what exactly I'm thinking about. So I'm thinking of this, big muscular archetypal, looking Hercules.
Uh-huh.
And as a Peplum star, that wasn't Lane Jeffries. I mean, he certainly wasn't unattractive or fat or paunchy or anything. He's in good condition. But he's not built up as much as, you know, a lot of the peplum actors. But still, I mean, he's wearing a toga and he can pull it off. You know, he's doing okay. And he acquits himself very well in Revolt of the Slaves. As I said, it was his first film. But he's got some natural talent. He's pretty good at what he does. And it's interesting, when I was looking at some of the promotional materials for Revolt of the Slaves, they clearly, the producers spent some money to get Rhonda Fleming, you know, to make the film. And they don't really, the marketing materials don't emphasize that enough. Do you know what I mean? Had I been that producer, I probably would have, you know, really pushed that, you know, screen star Rhonda Fleming's, you know, in her biggest epic yet, or, you know, something like that. And they really don't use her that well, you know, for that in the advertising. I thought they could have made, you know, more of it. I was kind of surprised that they sort of downplayed all of it. Now, that might have had something to do with the fact that, you know, this, you know, newly married couple immediately jumps in to make, you know, a peplum epic, and it wasn't as successful as it, you know, might have been, especially, you know, given the cast, you know, Rhonda Fleming, and their marriage didn't really survive the original release of the film. It kind of torpedoed their relationship, and they got a divorce. You know, inside of about a year and a half, their marriage, you know, began and ended, unfortunately. But at the time, she said that he had married her to sort of, you know, further advance his career, and you know, that could have been. Because you know, even in Hollywood today, people still do that. You know, marriages like that keep your name in the press. When your name is still in the press, that means you're a hot commodity. If you're a hot commodity, mm-hmm. that means producers want to hire you. I mean, it's perfect sense, and you do have to sort of create your own ballyhoo. You know, when you get to a certain level of celebrity, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I mean, he was not that much younger than she was. He was about approximately 7 years, you know, younger than she was, which, you know, we wouldn't really think about at the time. But back then, that was a big deal for some reason for, you know, the husband to be younger. Although to have a husband who's twice as old as his wife was okay, which, you know, I should people really make those decisions for you? But
good point.
Anyway, their marriage didn't last, and I don't know, maybe Rhonda Fleming had a point, because his next wife was divorced from J. Paul Getty II. Her name was Gail. And she was the mother of John Paul Getty III. And if you remember back when we were kids, he was kidnapped, you know, in the early 1970s. And
yes, I remember
his ear was severed from his head and, you know, mailed to his grandfather in order to, you know, get ransom money. And he was, you know, a very tragic figure. He overdosed when he was in his 20s, and he lost the ability to walk and speak afterward. It must have been a really bad, you know, OD. But like I said, really, really tragic figure. But yet he is the father of Balthazar Getty, who's an actor, who's, gosh, probably late 40s at this point, I would say. So, you know, maybe there is something to Lane Jeffries marrying up. I don't know. You know, he had met, after he and Rhonda Fleming went their own separate ways, he came back to the U.S. and did a movie called, it's one of my favorite, I don't even know what kind of, there were a number of rock and roll movies produced in the from the mid 50s on into the late 60s. The heyday of this was probably early 60s, and he was in one of them called Don't Knock the Twist. It's
Don't
got
knock
a really
the
impressive
twist?
Cast. Yes, it's a lot, the movie's a lot of fun.
Okay.
Chubby Checker.
I haven't seen that.
Chubby Checker is in it. And one of my favorite actresses, Mary Blanchard, is Lang Jeffrey's love interest in it. And she's a clothing designer in the film, and she is her line has sort of seen better days. She isn't doing very well in the fashion press, and Lang takes her out for a night of twisting, and she's inspired to develop clothing for women to do the twist in. And that's the whole crux of the movie, other than having a number of really good musical acts intertwined within a narrative that's probably like 40, 45 minutes or so. The movie's a lot of fun, some great music in it. You get to see Chubby Checker and Dee Dee Sharp do a duet, which, you know, how many movies can you say about that? And the movie's a lot of fun, but unfortunately, it didn't do anything for anybody's acting career. And seeing the writing on the wall, Lang Jeffries went back to Europe, and that's where he spent the rest of his career. Like I said, he did several Peplum films. Following Revolt of the Slaves, of course, he did Alone Against Rome, which is a pretty solid film. It's got decent production values. And he's also in Sword of the Empire. And I caught part of that today when I was walking on the treadmill after I got home from work. And the production values in it are really good. I was impressed. I haven't seen his entire catalog because, unfortunately, several of his films that were shot in Europe were never officially released in America. Some of them only exist in, let's say, in Italian or Spanish or German, European films. If they didn't make it stateside, they didn't get dubbed, into English. Mm. If they didn't make it into Great Britain, either. Some of his films are better than others. I really like his Eurospy films. Some of them are really good. I like Spy Strike Silently. I actually have that available on the Lang Jeffries page on my website. Unfortunately, it's one of those films that there are no English subtitles, and it is not dubbed into English. But that doesn't mean that you can't watch it and enjoy it. And I can't tell you how many films that I've watched in languages that I unfortunately can't read or understand, but you can still watch the film and appreciate it. It's not too dissimilar from watching, let's say, a silent film. When I was a kid, I was really entranced by silent films, very interested in them. And back in the early 70s, you even saw some remnants of silent films in programming for children. The Keystone Cops is one that that I remember being on, late afternoon, following school. Ben Turpin's comedies were really popular, and sometimes they would just run those old silent two reelers because with commercials they would take up close to 30 minutes. it worked out pretty well. In terms of timing in American time blocks, and which were usually half an hour long. But I love those old silent films, and it was easy to figure out what was going on, especially if they were title cards or something like that. But even a film where you don't understand the language that's spoken, you can still easily understand the meaning of it, as long as you pay attention. I am bad to wander away from a movie and then come back in because I'm Greg says that I have nervous energy and I can't relax, which is probably true.
I probably have nervous energy because I can't relax either.
Well, it's hard to sit down and, you know, stare at one thing for me for 2 hours. Now, if a film sucks me in, fine. You know, I can stay there for that.
But you watch movies while you're on your treadmill. I watch them while I'm working out with weights. So it's the same thing. I can't justify just watching the screen.
Right. Yeah, you've got to do something. Yeah, time's a wasting. you can't just sit in front of the television unless you're doing something else. And I am bad for that. One thing I have noticed, though, when I am kind of engrossed in, you know, watching a film, I'll be on the treadmill much longer than I would have ordinarily if I were listening to music. Because you sort of forget what you're doing, which is, you know, doing a little bit of cardio, and instead you're paying attention to the film. So I think that's the best of both worlds.
I believe so as well. And I actually write sometimes while I'm watching something. I'll take a break from what I'm watching to write, and because I've been doing more writing lately.
Oh, excellent. Anyway, I know we only have a few more minutes, and I wanted to wrap up my thoughts on Lane Jeffries. His career, by the time he was about 40 or so, his career had run its course, and he seemed to be done with it. You know, he probably could have gone on, worked longer, but I think he'd had enough. And he pulled out of Europe, returned to Southern California, and decided to go into business instead of, you know, acting. He did come out of retirement in the early 1980s. He was a good friend with H.B. Halicki, who was famous for Gone in 60 Seconds. It's a movie that I think all of us saw at a grindhouse in 1974, has some world class car chases in it. I love a car chase in an old 70s movie, and Gone in 60 Seconds is just 90 minutes of car chase. And what more could a 9-year-old boy want? You know. Well, he and Lane Jeffries and H.B. Halicki became friends in the 1970s. And when Halicki decided to make a couple of films in the 1980s. You know, knowing that Lane Jeffries had once been, you know, an actor with some reputation, he talked him into coming out of retirement for the two movies. They were shot in 1981 and 1982, I should say. And you know, he doesn't have a huge role in either film, but he's in it, you know, as a secondary character. And it's kind of interesting to see him about, like 15, 20 years later. He, like everybody else, he'd gotten older, but he's still instantly recognizable, very handsome guy. And unfortunately, he didn't live very long. He passed away in 1987. He was just 56 years old, younger than I am now.
Yeah.
Yeah, very young. And like I said, I plan on reworking the page. Not vastly. I just want to find a few more images from his Peplum films and work those in, maybe amend the wallpaper a little bit. We'll see what I can find and bring it in. That'll be the first new entry to the Many Faces of Hercules in, gosh, I don't know, probably 2 decades.
We'll have to celebrate that. And on your celebration show.
So something to look forward to.
Most certainly so. Thank you so very much, Brian. How can people contact you? How can they find the Drive-In Theater? How can they access your daily movies and all that?
Oh, well, the easiest way to do that is just to point your browser at briansdriveintheater.com. If you want to interact with me on social media, or if you want to see which movies I'm running each day to see if it's worth your while to watch them. And it always should be. I mean, I try to pick the best of what's public domain. And whenever we have a birthday of an actor, if there is a public domain film of that actor is available, that will be the movie of the day. But sometimes that's not possible. I do love to run peplum. I also love horror, science fiction, film noir. Oddly enough, there's a lot of grit. Some of the best film noir titles are public domain, which is just inexplicable to me.
That is great.
But I don't mind because, you know, but you can run them. And who doesn't love a good crime drama, you know, especially in black and white? It's my favorite. One of my favorites, I should say.
And you are this month's, actually starting tomorrow, champion of Sword and Sandal Cinema. So,
Yay, thank you.
Don't know what that's worth, but you certainly deserve it. So we'll be celebrating that all month. And every time we induct somebody new, you'll be celebrated anew.
Well, perfect. Thank you so much.
Have a wonderful evening. Say hi to Greg, and I look forward to our next conversation.
I will do that. Take care, Hercules.
You too. Take care. And thanks to everybody who tuned in, whether you called in and you're in our queue, whether you clicked on a link and found yourself here, or whether you'll be checking us out later on demand. Until next time, this is us wishing you joyous journeys and amazing adventures. Take care, everybody.